With the election right around the corner and our ever-expanding network of podcasts, including our most recent edition, Scylla Consciousness, there's never been a better time to become a member. In addition to no ads, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows, an invitation to join the DSR Slack community, access to our Discord community, and enhanced show notes for select shows. Our goal is to make the DSR Network membership accessible to everyone, so for the month of May, enjoy 60% off the normal monthly or annual price for the first month or first year. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and enter code MAYDAY, one word, at checkout. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code MAYDAY. Thank you very much for your support.
Nine, 12, 10, 28, 2, 23.
This is Deep State Radio, coming to you direct from our super secret studio in the third sub-basement of the Ministry of Snark in Washington, D.C., and from other undisclosed locations across America and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm David Rothkopf, coming to you from Washington, D.C. We are joined today, as always, by Dr. Corey Shockey of the American Enterprise Institute, who's coming to us from, it looks like, Washington, D.C. Also, it looks like her office.
It's true. I'm making a cameo appearance in my actual place of employment today.
It's amazing. It's amazing for all of us since COVID. Nobody's gone back to work. We're also joined by two friends. One, Noga Tarnopolsky, who's a freelance journalist based in Jerusalem, whose work has been published in the New York Times, the Washington Post, Haaretz, and more. Hi, Noga.
Hi.
And Alon Pincus, who served as Israel's consul general in New York and as the chief of staff and foreign policy advisor to one prime minister and four foreign ministers. I assume all of those are from Israel. Is that correct, Alon?
There was the North Korean thing, but that didn't last long.
Yeah, well,
you know, you don't put it on your resume, so I don't think you have to own.
I know. But I think I told David, I don't want to tire you with this. I told David the conversation I had with Dr. Kissinger a few years ago, when he offered me to work for the North Korean government. Now, he was joking, obviously, but.
Sorry, we missed that. I don't even recall that story. I wish we had time for it, but let's start a little closer to where you guys are. It seems that the director of Central Intelligence, who's been our leading negotiator on trying to find a ceasefire, is in Israel today, met earlier today with the prime minister of Israel. Even as a smallish operation is going on in Rafah, where do you think we stand right now on all of this, Noga?
Well, I have to say one very interesting thing is that there have been zero leaks today from the meeting between Benjamin Netanyahu and CIA Director Bill Burns. This is very unusual. Zero leaks and zero official statements. My understanding of this is that this meeting was too serious and possibly too loaded for it to be spun. So I think that Netanyahu slowly is being brought by the United States to the point in which he exactly doesn't want to be, which is he has to choose between Biden and Ben-Gvir. And I think that's what we're inching up to.
Yeah, it's interesting. There are always leaks. I noticed that typically when a meeting takes place, the first sign that it's over is that Barak Ravid is writing a story about it before anybody else has heard that it's over. Alon, what's your sense of where things are?
It's more or less what Noga said. I mean, I have nothing, no important or invaluable insights beyond what Noga said. Look, Netanyahu has, you know, it's a numbers game for him. It's 64 or 33. 64 is the number of members of Knesset in his coalition, and that dictates everything he does, says, leaks, manipulates, and connives. And 33 is the number of hostages who supposedly, if there is a deal, which doesn't seem likely at this point, if there is a deal, the 33 will be released in the first phase. Between having to choose between 64 and 33, he will choose 64. Even if that means confronting the U.S., which, as you know, because we've talked about this on this very podcast, on the DSR podcast, he is actively and very much deliberately seeking a confrontation with the Biden administration. You just see that in his statements of the last 2 weeks. I've been thinking that since November, and you, David, have just recently, yesterday, in fact, written about this. About how a non-ally, or the worst ally, as you called it, he is. And he's okay with that, because that doesn't change the number 64. As for the 33, he couldn't care less.
Can I ask a question of Alana Noga? Because some of the press coverage I've seen suggested that the war cabinet was unanimously against starting operations in Rafah, and Netanyahu didn't care. Doesn't that affect the 64?
But here's the thing. What you read is an account that at some point 10 days ago or a week ago, Netanyahu tried to insist in the midst of negotiations, in the midst of Qatari efforts, pushed by or encouraged actively by Bill Burns, the DCIA, he tried to push for an operation in Rafah. By the way, not the big operation, because the Israel cannot launch the big operation right now. And there was a majority inside the war cabinet against that. But don't misconstrue this. There is still a unanimous support in the cabinet for an operation in Rafah, period. Because these people developed, A, herd-like mentality, and B, they start believing in their own nonsense and drinking their own Kool-Aid that Rafah is some kind of the Battle of the Bulge or Stalingrad. It's a turning point. It's going to change the world as we know it. If we just take Rafah, then we take Berlin. All right, ain't going to happen.
I just want to add something technical, Corey, which is that the Netanyahu, according to an article that just was posted and out now, did push at the end of last week for the major or a major Gaza operation, but he was stopped by members of the war cabinet, as you just mentioned. Remember, they're not part of his coalition of 64. So we have electoral political considerations, and we have just kind of government functional considerations. But the people who stopped him, apparently, according to the latest information, basically vetoed what he was trying to do, are not voting members of the coalition. They're just members of the war cabinet.
Thank you both.
Yeah, well, Corey, let me ask you a question, and then I'll ask for their reaction to it. The Biden administration last week withheld something like 3,500 bombs that were making their way to Israel, about half of which were 2,000-pound bombs. This was seen as a message that the United States was very concerned about the operation in Rafah, and in particular did not want to be party to activities that could have significant collateral damage associated with them. Was it the right thing to do? And what does it tell you about where the Biden administration is?
So So I think it's magnificently optimistic of anybody in the White House to believe that they can make those kind of carefully calibrated marginal choices, and it's either going to have any effect on the Netanyahu government's choices, or it's going to cause opponents of Israel's operations to think the Biden administration is really exercising the influence the United States has. I think it's a small marginal gesture that the White House thinks is going to be hugely consequential, but I doubt it actually is.
So as small as it was, Noga, I heard my college roommate, Michael Oren, on television about an hour ago, saying it sent a terrible signal to the region and was terribly frustrating to Israelis. Was it?
Well, I think Israelis, if we're talking about regular Israelis, don't really understand the terminology that's being bandied about. And the Israeli media, I hate to say, is continuing in its really cavalier and fairly irresponsible coverage of the whole situation. And so for your average Israeli, what she or he hears tonight is, oh my God, the Americans are stopping weapons transfers. There's no nuance. There's no subtlety. It's, oh my God, Lloyd Austin spoke against us in Congress. And that's more or less where it stops. But I want to echo what Alon said. For the members of this government, who I want to restate, are not operating like what we would conventionally consider a rational government. For the members of this government, this is excellent news. They want the clash with the United States. They want this kind of Armageddon. It speaks to their base. And so I think we have to understand that even news like this that appears to be, you know, prima facie evidence that this is terrible news for Israel, it's good news for Netanyahu. And that is what wins the day in Israel these days.
That's an interesting perspective. Alon, you've been very vocal in many of your excellent columns, saying things like the Biden administration needs to do more, needs to put more pressure on Netanyahu, that there were, I don't know if you ever used the word feckless, but I think you felt frustrated with the inaction of the Biden administration on this front. What's your view now?
The same. I don't think the Biden administration has seriously made a policy change. The rhetoric may have intensified or become slightly harsher, but the transition from rhetoric to policy has not been made yet. Now, there are two ways of looking at it. What you're referring to, David, in terms of my frustrations with the Biden administration, it's not me as an Israeli being frustrated that the Biden administration or Joe Biden himself is not coming to help me and save me. None of that. I'm looking at it from an American perspective. I'm looking at it from a superpower perspective, and I'm looking at it from Biden's political perspective. And this war, in terms of how he manages Israel, has been terribly mismanaged. And it's not just Biden, it's also the people around him. You know that I have reservations about their input in this. Now, there are two options here. Either walk away and say, you know, the hell with you. David Rothkopf just wrote that he's our worst ally. Alon wrote several months ago that he's not an ally. We see nothing that he's doing, Netanyahu, that serves America's interest. In fact, he is disrupting American interests. Now that we've passed the Ukraine aid bill, that's what we really care about. And if the Israelis want to bomb Gaza, I've had enough. I'm isolated in the world because of my support for Israel. I'm hemorrhaging votes potentially in Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona, and Georgia with college students. I have Bernie Sanders and Chris Van Hollen and all over me to condition aid. You know, this is not a prime American interest. Why should I keep on being taken for a ride by Netanyahu? Hey, that's one approach. The other approach is, okay, we've been sucked into this. We, America, have been sucked into this, dragged into this. Circumstances have made us indispensable in this. We see the October 7th differently than the Israelis. The Israelis think they can bond themselves back into October 6th. We think it's the exact opposite. We think that now there are two axes. One is a clear, almost already built, constructed axis of anarchy, chaos, and terror with Iran and Syria and Hezbollah and Hamas and the Houthis and Russia overlooking, clapping their hands. And then there's another axis that we can now forge, the one in which we're in the middle, we America are in the middle, that we're gonna configure some kind and construct some kind of a new architecture with Saudi Arabia, Israel, Egypt, Jordan, Qatar, the Emirates, Oman, and the Palestinians in the middle. And we look at this, and this is America's vision. This is indeed the so-called Biden doctrine, even though I would not go as far as to call it a doctrine, but nonetheless. And when I look at it, I see that there's a weak link. The weak link right now is Israel. And so from an American point of view, I look at how they are being, you know, misguided and delusional about, we know Netanyahu, we'll get along with Netanyahu. He speaks our language. We know how to harness him. We know how to rein him in. No, guys, you don't. There's one thing he's good at, and that's manipulation. And he's been manipulating you for 7 months. It's about time you wake up. That's my frustration. Not because I want or expect Biden to save my soul here in Israel.
Hey everybody, some big news from the New Republic. TNR's Stop Trump Summit is making a stop in Philadelphia, the birthplace of American democracy. You know, that thing you cherish that Trump and the MAGA movement are determined to burn to the ground. The Stop Trump Summit focuses on how America got to this dangerous place, how Trump could use the government against its own people should he be reelected, and what laws and politics are at stake. The Stop Trump Summit will be held live at the Liberty View at Independence Visitor Center in Philadelphia on Saturday, May 18th from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Among the featured speakers are Mary Trump, Rick Wilson, co-founder of the Lincoln Project, Molly Jong Fast, host of the popular Fast Politics podcast, as well as Will Bunch, national opinion columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer, David Cohen, professor at Drexel Klein School of Law, and PA State Senator Vincent Hughes, plus many others. It's an event you won't want to miss. It will be nothing if not cathartic, and it may even inspire you to action. For tickets, go to tnr.com/events. This threat to America's democracy and the future of our country must be stopped. Joining TNR at the Stop Trump Summit in Philly is a great place to start.
Corey, Alon has painted a beautiful picture that the administration is sitting down and evaluating their decisions in terms of Alon's columns and my columns. and of course, we know that's not true. It's things that you whisper in their direction. And also, there was a good column today by our friend, who didn't make it here today, but he will next week, Ed Luce, who said, you know, if Netanyahu succeeds in what he's doing, it ultimately in the long run is going to benefit Netanyahu's friend Putin, and that Biden needs to be aware of that in the calculus as well. What did you think of that?
Well, I do think it's true that the Biden administration's support for the Israeli government and Israel's choices in responding to the October 7th terrorist attack have made for problems for the United States in its foreign policy with a number of countries, in particular in the global South. But also, Russia and China are thrilled at the ability to put the U.S. in the penalty box ostensibly on a human rights issue, because China and Russia are such egregious violators of their own citizens' human rights and so many others, most notably Ukrainian. And so I do think that being so closely associated with the Netanyahu government's choices, the U.S. will pay a price for that in its unrelated foreign policy issues. But I don't think this is a big win for Putin. I don't think it's a big win. I don't see it likely when the only country that's actually willing to support Israel, that is the United States, that somehow pushes Netanyahu into Putin's arms. I mean, I think what the United States has demonstrated with its support of Israel since October 7th is that we are willing to stand alone and support Israel when others won't. And if I were the Russians, that wouldn't make me particularly comfortable.
No, but Netanyahu doesn't appreciate Biden for this. In fact, he's doing the exact opposite.
It's the luxury of being an American ally that you get to do as you please and blame the United States for
it. But here's
wrong.
The thing. David and I, from different angles, but converging at the same point, don't think that Netanyahu is behaving or constitutes an American ally.
So I don't question that. Both you and David know Israeli politics so much better than I do, and you both make good cases. I'm saying from an American perspective, even if Netanyahu doesn't consider Biden an ally, what Biden has demonstrated
is
he's so much more reliable than any other world leader has been willing to be. And so, you know, I don't think Netanyahu is respecting that particularly well, but he still has it.
More reliable than any American president since 1948, and conceivably the last president to be that way.
Yeah, that's true. Now, Noga, you know, I'm sitting here listening to these two talk and watching you tweet simultaneously. which is an old trick that I've learned here. Doing this podcast now for 10 years. But you were tweeting that there was a spokesperson on Israeli TV saying the U.S. is actually backing Hamas. I just thought you should elaborate on that. And then you're a regular tweeter about the demonstrations regarding Netanyahu, and I'd like to turn the conversation to whether they have any political salience. So you may speak on either of those points, Noga.
I will speak to both. It wasn't any spokesperson. What caught my eye, and it specifically was following up on our conversation, is Netanyahu has his own version of a kind of OANN channel, One America channel here in Israel. It's called Channel 14. And their talk program tonight is focused on how the United States is Hamas's top ally. It's interesting to me, because it's an indication that that's the message that Netanyahu wants to get out. And, we can leave it there. But this was particularly harsh, I thought. And remember that Netanyahu is kind of throwing all of this mud around in the context in which, if Israelis were ever given a moment to breathe, they would remember that Netanyahu acted as Hamas's Swiss bank for an uncomfortable number of years. And that's what he's learned. That's one of the things he's trying to muddy. In terms of the protests, do they have political salience? It's hard to answer you, because if we're going to speak kind of with brutal political logic, the only thing that has political salience right now is that Netanyahu has an extremist, lunatic coalition of 64 people out of 120 Knesset members. And until he loses three or four of them, he will remain in power. And so Israel finds itself in the situation of, you know, the patient who has to return to the same doctor who ended up infecting him with cancer and not curing him of cancer. That's the situation. The protests are getting more acute. What strikes me about these protests is their kind of relentless quality. We got accustomed before the war to seeing these kind of massive rolling protests, hundreds of thousands of Israelis on the streets from north to south every Saturday night, like clockwork. What we're seeing now is, in a way, well, certainly it's no less impressive. It's daily protests, morning and night, everywhere. There's a protest tonight in Jerusalem an hour ago. There are several protests right now in Tel Aviv. There were this morning. There are protests in, you know, the kind of bedroom communities outside Tel Aviv. There are protests up north. So there is this impressive, relentless quality. Today, the head of Israel's most important union threatened again to announce a national strike in support of these protesters, in support of early elections. But the bottom line is a brutal bottom line, and that's that until something or someone topples Netanyahu's government, he'll be in power. And his strongest feature is his weakest feature, which is that he's surrounded by extremists, and as nutty as they are, they know or they feel that this is their only chance to wield real power, and they're not planning on letting go of it, as I see it.
Yeah, so, Alon, you know, why pick on us? You know, let's pick on the Israeli people. You know, you guys have Netanyahu. He's still in power after all of this stuff. You know, you've long ago talked about the lack of spine as far as members of the Knesset. You know, and finding five of them that would switch sides in the interests of the future of Israel. Is the reality that a lot of Netanyahu spokespeople offer on the media that, you know, he represents the majority view in Israel, or is it not?
No, he does not. You actually should stop listening to your college roommate. In fact, if I were you, I would retroactively change my roommate. You know, pick someone else. Al Gore. I don't know.
He was in college long before me. Thank you very much.
I know.
Al Gore had a sexy actor as his Harvard roommate. Tommy Lee Jones.
Tommy Lee Jones was
he was his roommate. Yeah. But you know, you just
okay. I made a bad choice. You're avoiding the question. I totally agree that I made more than one bad choice in college roommates. I might add, but in terms of Israel. Or is Netanyahu likely to be the status quo in Israel, let's say, through the end of this year?
I don't think so, but that end of the year is pretty close. It's 6 months away, so 6.5 months away. So I'd say 50-50, but I still maintain that he will not survive this. You see that, by the way, in consistent polls, that 70% plus want him out, want him to resign. The only difference within that group is those who want him to resign immediately and those who say, wait until the end of the war, whatever the hell the end of the war means. Noga is right in terms of the mechanics, the political mechanics. How do you topple him? You need four, you need five. You need the coalition to crumble. How is it going to crumble? Is it going to be around the ultra-Orthodox conscription law? Is it going to be around his trials? Is it going to be as a result of American pressure? I don't know. And you have other people partly analyzing, partly wishfully thinking that he has health issues. He does have severe health issues. I don't know. I just don't see him. Look, his responsibility for the debacle, the catastrophe, the horror of October 7th is not going to go, is not going to wither away. Okay? And the fact that you don't see hundreds of thousands demonstrating has to do with two things. A, the Israeli psyche, which means that you don't demonstrate against the government in the midst of a war. And B, because of general fatigue, people are still devastated and agonizing over what happened. That doesn't mean that if there's no hostage deal today, tomorrow, or the next day, and if the DCIA, well, he's not going to say it, but it comes out, it emerges that the DCIA, Bill Burns, or an administration believes that it was within reach, but Netanyahu is the one who foiled it. I would not discount the possibility of huge public uproar against him. Don't forget, no one thinks we're winning the war. No one thinks we're in better shape right now. There are 85,000 Israelis who've been relocated, dislocated, or uprooted from their homes along the Lebanese border. I don't see him surviving this. I mean, the easiest thing is to say, and even Noga fell into that trap a moment ago, is that this, you know, people are saying, you know, you develop this kind of servile attitude. Anything that happens, well, it's good for him. If a meteorite hits Earth, it's good for Netanyahu. If there's a hostage deal, it's good for Netanyahu. If there's no hostage deal, oh, that's good for Netanyahu. If the confrontation with Biden, that's very good for Netanyahu. No confrontation with Netanyahu, excellent for Netanyahu. No. There's accumulation, there's a cumulative effect here of negative things about him. I don't see him surviving this, David.
I want to defend myself.
Well, let me come to you in one moment, okay? Because we have 5 minutes left, and I'm going to go to Corey, because I also know she has to leave. And I'm going to ask her a question that I'll ask each of the two of you a question. But Corey, I want to pick up on something Noga said earlier before she defends herself. And that is, we were talking, or maybe Alon made a reference to it, about Netanyahu backing Hamas. In the story that came out most recently about this, where we sort of saw the documents of it, turned out that when Netanyahu made the decision to to ask the Qataris to provide more money for Hamas, he felt he needed the support of the Trump administration, and got the support of the Trump administration, and then specifically Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, to go to the Qataris and say, we won't put you on a terrorist watch list if you pass this money through to Hamas. And, you know, I've found this kind of strange that this is not a bigger story in the U.S., that Trump actually okayed directing money to Hamas. And, you know, that's, you know, it was sort of one of the original sins that led us to where we are. What's your reaction to that, Corey?
My reaction is to say you are exactly right, David.
That's all I seek on this podcast.
No, I think that's right. I mean, it's very difficult politically to pin former President Trump down, but on an enormous number of foreign policy issues, I mean, China, he's trying to describe his record as tough on China. And in fact, he has a terrible record on China, as my colleague Derek Scissors so frequently writes about. And so I think it's one more example where we need to keep pressing the point that there are decisions the Trump administration made, actions that they took that actually supported Hamas. And this is one of them.
Yeah, absolutely right. It's to me outrageous and needs more visibility. Noga, you wanted to defend yourself.
I just want to say, I think the current situation is terrible for Netanyahu. I'm not among the people who Alon described as thinking everything is good for Netanyahu. I think things are so terrible for him that he will do anything to hold on, because it's only going to get worse. So I think things are terrible for him and terrible for Israelis. I also, unlike I think the rest of you, have some sympathy for Joe Biden and for his administration. I think when it comes to the Middle East, things are not great for him too. And I do think that the United States has a clear interest of its own in making sure that it props up Egypt, making sure it props up Jordan. Part of that is making sure that Israel does not tumble from the map of the nations of the world. And Netanyahu is making it very, very difficult. So I think Netanyahu's in a terrible situation, and he's dangerous, and he's making it terrible for everybody. That's my defense. I can't remember the question you asked, but I will.
No. I just wanted I wanted to give you your chance to defend yourself before we wrap this.
She repented. She did not defend herself. She just repented, and I appreciate that.
Well, okay. Well, David, I do want to say that I think your point that Trump was a cognizant and active partner in Netanyahu's act of treason in construing this plan for Hamas to receive subsidies from Qatar, basically via Israel with a U.S. okay, I agree with you that that is very significant news, and it should be huge news in an electoral year in the United States. So I trust you're going to make it thus.
Yeah, I will, single-handedly. You know, there's a lot of big election stories. There's only 1 minute left here. And frankly, Alon, I really feel let down by you. Because here we had this story today that Robert F. Kennedy had a worm that was eating his brain.
Okay.
And I just haven't seen you pick up on that. And it seemed to be like the most natural Alon Pincus story ever.
What I can't believe is that Farrell left Larry for him. Okay. Daryl left Larry David for this moron. That escapes me. I don't know. I don't know what to do with it.
I got to tell you that we are in a political season where one of the leading Republicans admits
have gotten lazy with a storyline of a brain worm for RFK. I saw somebody had that. I think Brendan Nyhan had that up on Blue Sky. And it really resonated.
But you know what, David and Corey, oh God, every time I despair because I live in a moronocracy, I look at Kristi Noem, the governor of South Dakota, at Lauren Boebert, and my beloved Marjorie Taylor Greene.
You're welcome for America's service.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Gary Shangard had a brilliant tweet about this, which I retweeted, where he said that the poor worm that ate Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s brain died of malnutrition.
Yes, no, I saw that. There were so many opportunities. And I just, like, I was behind the story. I kept wanting to get in front of it. Last week, there was shooting a puppy. This week, there's brain worms. Who knows where we're going with all this? Anyway, it's helpful because the stories we're talking about with regard to the current struggles in Israel and in Gaza are deeply serious, and we look anywhere we can, I think, for comic relief. We also look for wisdom wherever we can find it, and regularly find it. From you, Noga, and from you, Alon, and always from Corey and our other regulars. And we'll keep looking for it each and every week, so I'm sure we'll see you guys again very soon. Until then, thank you, Noga, Alon, Corey, and everybody for listening. And we'll be back again with you with another podcast in, you know, hours, undoubtedly. Until then, bye-bye.